And a very good morning to you. How are you? Are you well? Sunday morning, August 2nd. We're into August now. And it is me, the BBG, with you until around about midday with a Sunday View, where we'll look through the newspapers in the UK. And, well, there's a lot in the newspapers this morning. It's not all COVID-19, you'll be glad to hear. Lots to talk about. As usual, I hope you'll join in on Twitter. You know how to do that. I don't need to teach you how to suck eggs. Welcome to Sunday View. Good to be with you.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, here's the host indeed. Lovely weekend it's been for me. Lovely evening yesterday with our friends and neighbours, having a couple of bottles of vino and a nice bit of grub. Nothing like it. Yes, this is Sunday View, and it's not so COVID-centric this morning, he says. And then on reflection, it might be. But it won't be dull anyway. A lot of tweets coming in already. Thanks to you for tweeting me. Good morning to you, wherever you happen to be in the world. A lot of our Australian friends have been in touch with the programme overnight to talk to me about Melbourne and their disgust and dismay at what is transpiring in Melbourne. Sky News all over this morning. Melbourne to face tighter restrictions as state of disaster is declared there. Now, Melbourne, of course, is in the Australian state of Victoria, and a state of disaster has been declared in the state itself. New restrictions coming into force Sunday night. So now, really, in Australia, including an evening curfew right across the state of Victoria. You will not be allowed outside between the hours of 8 in the evening and 5 in the morning. If you're living in the city of Melbourne, you're only allowed to shop and exercise within 3 miles of your home. 1 hour of exercise per day, per person, and only one person allowed from any one household to go to the shops. Gatherings of no more than 2 people. Students at universities will be told to, basically, they'll be restricted to home-based learning, and childcare centres closed in Melbourne. Daniel Andrews, the state premier, said the state of disaster gave police greater powers because of 671 new coronavirus cases. Look, I don't know what to say to you about that, other than what has been said already. It doesn't surprise me. This is accelerating now at a speed of knots. The draconian measures being implemented, not just in Australia, but around the world as well. I don't know what to say to you that I haven't said already. The media is in complete lockstep with it. There is no challenge to it, outside of people bitching about it on Facebook and on Twitter, which is where the only discussion of it takes place. But the discussion doesn't necessarily mean there'll be any movement towards action. People are bitching about it, complaining about it. It's scaring people. But really, to date, what are people doing except discussing it? Now, I get all the time, I get, regularly I get, he says, speaking like Yoda. Let me say it properly. I receive a lot of emails from people challenging me to do something about it. I'm a journalist. I have done all that I can do over the years in highlighting the lies, the mendacity, the evil. I've shone a light on it by giving a platform to guests. It isn't up to me to do anything. Do you understand? I can only do what I do within my very, very small circle. But I'm not responsible for anybody else. I have done my job repeatedly, day in, day out, in shining a light on it. Outside of that, there isn't anything else I can do. It's up to people not to wait for heroes and heroines and truthers from the ridiculous truther industrial complex to come to your aid. You're going to have to stand up to it yourself. You know what I'm saying? And I don't want to sound grumpy because I'm in great form this morning and I'm never really grumpy when I come on air. But I do despair when I see people having a go at me for talking about it. I'm doing my job. Expertly doing my job in dismantling it. Outside of that, what the hell can I do? You know, the programme has got at least 2 million unique listeners around the world. But they're scattered to the four corners of the earth. If they were living in Greater Manchester, the 2 million listeners, maybe we could do something in Manchester. But I don't know what else to tell you. You know, you've got to do something for yourself. Don't wait for your heroes, your truthers. Don't. You've got to do something now if you want to. You've got to disobey, not comply. You've got to bring others with you. It's how I've always seen the response, the answer to this tyranny. This is pure tyranny now. It's not hidden. It's not masked. It's not cloaked anymore. Fair play to Ike. About 5 years ago, Ike said to me, he said, by the end of this decade, they'll no longer be able to hide it. And that's why you get stories in the Times yesterday talking about the need to deploy the army to deal with the inevitable civil unrest as people become aware. I mean, I'm going to talk in a few minutes about job losses. Nobody has any idea, really, of the job losses and the financial devastation to come. Nobody. And I'm not saying you don't, and I'm not saying you're stupid, but I know, I've seen it, I've looked at it from every angle. Finance, figures, money, that's one of my rare, because I don't have too many talents, but I can look at it and see what's going to happen. You're looking at millions and millions of people out of work. They know that at some stage, some group of people, somebody's going to stand up to it. It'll be on in the housing estates of Salford or Birmingham. And that's why they're suggesting having the army on standby. They know what it is they're doing to people. And of course, the politicians can't reverse it. The politicians are just managers of the agenda for the people who are really behind it. And the politicians can't take it on. Because every one of them is compromised. Every last one of them. Look at Johnson delivering the news that he was putting the brakes on the lockdown. He looked terrified, Johnson did. He looked like, again, like back in March, he looked like he actually couldn't believe he was saying this stuff. But he's not going to do anything about it, because he can't. Even as ugly an individual, as hateful a bastard as Boris Johnson is, because he is, he's a dirty, rotten, disgusting, hateful person. But he's still a human being. Johnson knows. If he ever doubted it, he ain't in charge. The people above him ain't in charge, and the people above them ain't in charge. He's halfway down the pyramid, and he's looking up now going, holy shit, they're really doing this. And he can't do anything about it. The only people who can do anything about it are us. The way you do it is you turn your back on it. You refuse to go along with it. I had a very interesting situation in Sifter's record shop in Burnage on Friday morning. Now, if you go to Sifter's to buy second-hand records, you'll know that the man who runs it, Pete's a lovely bloke. And it's a great place to buy second-hand vinyl because Pete is ridiculously reasonable. You'll buy really good vinyl records in immaculate condition and you're paying £3.99, £4.99 per... I spend 20 quid in there every 2 weeks and I love Pete. And I was there on Friday morning at 9.30 when he opened the shop. And he says to me, Richie, will you keep an eye there while I get some stuff out of the car? So I said, no problem. So I'm standing there and a bloke came in. I didn't pay any attention to him. And a couple of minutes later, Pete came in. So I went to start browsing some vinyl. And the bloke would come into the shop very loudly said to me, would you put a mask on? And I said, no. And I went back to flipping through the vinyl. And then he started swearing at me about his grandchildren and started calling me names. Knobhead and arsehole. So I said to Pete, listen, Pete, you got to deal with this because you don't want me to deal with it. So Pete said to him, you over there, mind your own business, he said. But the guy kept it up. You effing knobhead. This is 9.30 on Friday morning. And I'm thinking, I'm going to fucking clean this guy out now. Because that's what I would have done in the past. I used to be, I'm a different guy than the guy I used to be. And then I thought, no. So I just ignored him. And eventually Pete went and saw him and told him to calm down. But as I was leaving, I couldn't resist having a pop at him. And I invited him to come outside and call me a knobhead. I said, I won't do anything in here because I respect the shop and the man too much. But if you want to come outside and call me a knobhead again, let's see what happens. And I shouldn't have done that either, because violence is wrong. Anyway, his bollocks fucking shrank, and of course he didn't do anything. But as I was driving home in the car, I realised, right, what this has done this 3-4 months, what it's done to me personally, is it's turned me off people in ways that I never thought were possible. Because I'm a real empathetic type of guy, me. I have a heart and I have feelings for people. Whether I know you or don't know you, I have empathy and sympathy. What this has done is it's made me start to see ordinary people as the enemy. And that's not right either. That's wrong. But I looked at the guy, and whereas previously I would have had some sympathy with him, because he's brainwashed, of course. On Friday, my instinct was to just clean him out. And that's dreadful. And I was driving home with the car reflecting on that, and I was thinking, it's really hardened you up, Richie. I gave myself a talking to in the car coming back from Burnage, driving across the city. And I thought, you need to start, you need to get away from that. It's a bad road to go down, to see people as the enemy, because they're not the enemy. They're not. It's a real totalitarian way of looking at people. The enemy is the group behind it. Not the people who are wearing the masks and screaming at people in shops. Fuckwits though they might be, they're not the enemy. So it was an interesting situation. And just after that, I went to a local supermarket. So I was wound up then. And I thought in the supermarket, if anybody says anything, I'm going to go postal in the supermarket. But I didn't. I came home and I told the future Mrs. A. And she said, well, thank God you didn't hit the guy. And, you know, that's not you anyway. You don't do that. But, yeah, it's a strange thing. And I just think it's going to get worse. I think it's going to get worse. Let's look at the front pages of the newspapers before we move on. Lots to talk about this morning. Very quickly, Tory MP quizzed by police over sex attacks. Right. A Conservative MP who's also been a minister has been questioned by the police over Westminster police over allegations of rape and sexual assault. This is on the front page of the Mail on Sunday. The paper says the former minister is accused of assault and he's been questioned by police at a London police station. A Sky News reporter called Sadia Chowdhury filed this report for Sky News. Have a listen.
Well, Sky News can't reveal the identity of the MP, but we understand that he was arrested on suspicion of rape and questioned for several hours at a London police station. The complainant is a young woman who used to work in Parliament. On Friday night, we believe she spoke to the Metropolitan Police and raised a number of allegations with them, including rape. And these allegations span a period of 6 months. Now, we also understand that she spoke to a fellow MP about this, and she also alerted the Chief Whip of the Conservative Party, Mark Spencer, and also the Leader of the House of Commons, Jacob Rees-Mogg, in the last few weeks, before we understand that she contacted the police. Well, the police, Metropolitan Police Service, has issued a statement confirming some of this, in that it says, on Friday the 31st of July, the Metropolitan Police Service received allegations relating to 4 separate incidents involving allegations of sexual offences and assault. These offences are alleged to have occurred at addresses in Westminster, Lambeth and Hackney between July 2019 and January 2020. A man in his 50s was arrested on Saturday, 1st of August, on suspicion of rape. Well, we also contacted the Conservative Party, and a Conservative Party spokesperson told us, we take all allegations of this nature extremely seriously. As this matter is now in the hands of the police, it would be inappropriate to comment further. Now, in the next 24 hours, you can expect questions about who knew what in the Conservative Party and when, and whether they took swift action in dealing with these allegations.
Yeah. Back in the good old days, the MP would go to the whips and they'd get him off the hook. At the Sunday Times front page, emails reveal officer fears of rogue SAS assassination squad. I totally butchered that, didn't I? Emails reveal officers' fears of rogue SAS assassination squad. A judge has ordered the Defence Secretary Ben Wallace to explain why evidence that a rogue SAS unit executed Afghan civilians was withheld from a High Court case. The paper says the Special Forces Regiment is accused of covering up war crimes, as serious concerns have been expressed about the killings of 22 people in 11 night raids. That's in the Times. The Observer leads with, now teachers sound alarm over plans to reopen schools. Leading scientists and the head of a teaching union have raised concerns about plans to reopen schools in September. Sunday Telegraph front page, Minister's blueprint to avoid new lockdown. So the Telegraph alleges that Johnson, Boris Johnson, has asked officials to prepare a blueprint of possible measures that could help to avoid shutting down the economy for a second time. Enhanced shielding, stricter local measures, and imposing a city-wide lockdown in London if infection numbers rise are among the proposals. More on those shortly. The Sunday Telegraph also carries an exclusive interview with a woman who says her name was in Ghislaine Maxwell's Little Black Book. And this woman who was interviewed by the newspaper said she knows Ghislaine Maxwell's darker side from her time in New York City. The Sunday Express headline is, virus fears put lives back on hold. Millions of people not going away this year due to concerns about the virus, according to the Sunday Express. Those living in popular UK destinations are also keen to stay inside in case tourists bring the infection with them. Sunday Mirror front page, stop this chaos. Boris Johnson is under pressure to get a grip on the government's chaotic handling of the pandemic, according to the Sunday Mirror, which is demanding transparency and clarity in order for the public to, basically go along with the measure. Sunday People says, don't let another 200,000 die, Boris. This is about care homes, and it's a plea to Johnson to save care homes before a second wave of infections. Those are the headlines on the front pages of the Sunday newspapers. It is 17 minutes past 11. This is Sunday View with me, Richie Allen, live on richieallen.co.uk, triggerwarning.tv, the usual platforms, and TuneIn Radio as well. Alrighty, here's Carole King then. And after Carole King, we'll look in depth at one or two of these stories. Nice to be with you this morning. Carole King, the opening track on the Amazing Tapestry album there. I Feel the Earth Move, covered in the 1980s by Martika. Do you remember that? Yeah, that's a real DJ bit of information, that. Information you didn't need. But you might need it. You might be on, I don't know, The Chase, and it might come up, and then, Jesus, the BBG taught me that, Martika. Good morning! Listen, let me read a few comments before we move on. This is not going the way I planned it, this programme. There's a lot of information to get through. Hi to Kate Vignoles. How you doing, Kate? I hope I pronounced your surname correctly, Kate. I know I've said this before. Kate says, Richie, glad you brought this up. We all have to do our bit, but cleverly, without anger. If possible, it is pitchfork time, as John Waters, the Irish journalist, has said. Thank you, Kate. I appreciate that. Hi to Bass Ninja. Hi to Dean Smith. Dean, how you doing? Why, Richie? Can we see the light so clearly and they can't? They being our friends and neighbours. I've been asking myself that for the last 7 days. I can only come up with mass hypnosis. Dean, my man, this is how it is. Predictive programming, television programming, films, for years, man. Subliminal stuff. That's how it's worked for years and years and years. It's the boiling frog thing. You're absolutely right. And Steve James tweets he had a similar incident where a guy threatened to knock him out. Steve laughed it off and the guy backed off. Thankfully, the guy backed off. Listen, don't be hitting anybody. Because an assault in the blink of an eye, born out of you losing your temper in a flash, can turn into manslaughter and ruin your feckin' life. An innocuous smack on the face can lead to a stumble and a banging of the head and a coma, and then you've been in jail for 10 years. Don't hit anybody. You know, I came from, I had a very violent upbringing. And in my younger years, I saw violence as a solution to some problems. I was never a thug and I was never a bully. But I never backed down and I was wrong. Violence is not the answer. Walk away from it. you know, walk away. I put your testicles back into your pocket and walk away from it. I'm telling you, you're better off. You know, I really, you know, I can't stress that enough. I think Kate is bang on. Liz hasn't given up any hope, she says. Given up all hope, she hasn't. Some people are becoming aware, and the longer this nonsense goes on, more people will have the opportunity to see the bullshit, says Liz. Thank you, Liz. Hi to Paul, who says, but they're loving it, Richie. Right or wrong, they're jumping on a morally superior bandwagon over wearing masks. Some people are, no doubt. Hi to David Kona. Hi to Paul Smith. Hi to Maggie May. Paul Smith's not happy with the Richie Allen Show. And then he's deleted his tweet then, whatever that was. Don't self-censor. If you've insulted me on Twitter, leave it there. I couldn't give a shite. I couldn't give a shite. Right, here we go. 24 minutes past the hour. One of the big stories in the Sunday Express today is a report on the development of a vaccine. And according to the Sunday Express today, a vaccine might be ready by the end of this year. Here's presenter Stephen Dixon with the writer Mo Lovett on Sky News reviewing the newspapers. You'll hear the presenter first. Big story. Vaccine apparently nearly ready to go.
Mo to the Sunday Express, looking at a vaccine. Keep waiting, don't we? It looks like it could be still some time off here in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is potentially good news. There's been a deal agreed between GlaxoSmithKline and Sanofi Pasteur, I hope I pronounced that correctly, to produce 60 million doses. And I think the key headline points from this article really are that they're saying vulnerable people could be protected by the end of this year. So obviously we're all concerned about winter and having to be indoors rather than outdoors. And flu, the problem is, we will have an increase in flu cases where the symptoms can on the surface look very similar to COVID-19. So that feels like good news to me. The other headline facts from here is that frontline staff and social workers could be protected from as early as next year. So I think this will make a lot of people working in those sectors feel immensely relieved.
Relieved, eh?
Relieved. And the government has invested in a kind of innovation centre, Vaccine and Innovation Centre is the title, in Oxford. And they're saying that the entire population of the UK could be protected sometime early in 2021.
Early 2021, the entire population of the UK might be protected in early 2021 now.
So, I mean, this is quite an extraordinary development, really, if you think about how long it normally takes to produce a vaccine.
Yeah, it is an extraordinary development when you take into account how long it ordinarily takes to produce a vaccine. Mad stuff, this.
Human trials have already been undergone, and it looks like that T cell immunity, which might protect us in the longer term, it is looking like... So it's extraordinary, really, how far we've come. And I think hats off to the people at Oxford University for getting us this far.
Yes, until we all start dropping down with narcolepsy or chronic fatigue. Then you won't be taking your hats off to anybody, love. You know, swine flu. I would give my kingdom, which doesn't consist of very much, for a presenter to just say swine flu vaccine. That's three words. Swine flu vaccine, love.
I know not everybody will want to take the vaccine,
and you're damn right.
I certainly wouldn't think that it should be mandatory. But if that's a choice that people want to take to protect themselves from COVID-19, then surely it can only be good news.
Good news.
Yeah. I think getting it rolled out as quickly as possible, as safely as possible, though, of course, is the key.
Is the key. As quickly as possible and as safely as possible. The vaccine. At least she said, Mo Lovett, the writer, who's normally, she's pretty decent when she reviews the newspapers. At least she said, I don't think it should be mandatory. But of course, it won't have to be mandatory. This is the thing. They won't have to do it. What are we? 27 minutes past the hour? Indeed, we are. Back with you in a moment, and I'll read more of your comments.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Welcome back. It is Sunday View with me, Richie Allen. Good morning to you if you've just tuned in. Where the hell were you? But you're not too late. Still plenty of interesting things to talk about between now and the end of the programme. Hi to Jason. Thank you, Jason. Hi to David, who says, Donald Trump, Richie, said the military is ready to help with the vaccine. Not sure if that means distribution, logistics, expediency, or actually enforcement of inoculation, says David. Well, look, this is the way it is. We reported on this programme, by we, I mean I, last week. They've already been discussing here in the UK new ways to deliver the vaccine. Drive-in places. They've talked about, you know, reassigning big car parks and such. Places like big car parks, big shopping centres, like the Trafford Centre, of putting stations in these places so that they can grab people. I made the analogy, you know, when you walk down Market Street and you got these poor young men and women working for charities, asking you to sign up to £3 a month or £5 a month to Oxfam or whatever. That's the way it's going to look. People will be badgering you. Did you have the COVID vaccine? The third dose? Did you? No, well, you should have it. They'll have these centres everywhere. And they will also have testing centres everywhere, inviting people to come and be tested. And of course, this is one of the great scams. Because 99% of people who have this, whatever it is, it doesn't have any real complications for them. They don't really get sick. But they might have it. So what they're doing is, they're testing as many people as they can, and people are willingly now being tested in the UK. They're ringing up the NHS to arrange a test. And a lot of people then are being tested, and the test is coming up positive for any one of any number of coronaviruses, but that person is not sick. They're asymptomatic. And there is no proof that an asymptomatic person is contagious. None. They say they suspect that asymptomatic people can pass it on, but they just suspect it. They've no proof of it. So when they're saying 36 cases, we are finding 36 positive cases out of 100,000. That doesn't mean anything. You know, this is the greatest hoax. Not the virus itself. There might be a virus. I don't know. Although I'm beginning to suspect that it was a flu. A strain of flu, maybe. I don't know. I'm not saying there isn't a virus. That would be foolish because I don't know. And I don't play that game, that truth or bollocks game. I don't do it. So they're testing as many people as they can to find evidence of a virus in asymptomatic people who are completely healthy. And then they're going to the microphones saying we need now to put the brakes on. And they know it's bullshit. But they can't stop it because it isn't their agenda. They're just the managers of it. You see? That's how it's going. It's a nonsense. Nobody knows anybody who's sick around me. Nobody's been sick. Nobody knows anybody who's been sick or seriously sick or who was hospitalised. It's a nonsense. I live a stone's throw from Salford Hospital. Massive hospital in the northwest. Never under any real pressure. I know this because I know several people who work there. Massive lie. But it carries on. You know, number of people yesterday, I posted articles on Facebook and on Twitter, number of so-called experts saying that things will not change until we have the vaccine. Imagine it. Imagine it. This is where we are. Speaking of localised lockdowns, Sky News is running a feature all day today. They do these features, they create these little 6-minute features, and it's in Sandwell in West Bromwich in the Midlands. Sandwell is a town which is under threat of a local lockdown, even though 36 people out of 100,000 are testing positive for whatever this is, and like I said, most of them asymptomatic. So they're threatening Sandwell. And I just grabbed you the tail end of the report so you can have a listen to it, because you hear local people talking and you can see, I suppose it's palpable, almost palpable, listening to it, how successful the propaganda has been in convincing people that there is a deadly virus going around and all of this is necessary. This is Sky News in Sandwell. Have a listen.
It used to be heaving on a daily basis, Monday through to Saturday, but this could be the final nail in the coffin. And if we've got a second wave, that really could devastate the whole area. If they lock down Sandwell, Smethwick, people will drive to Birmingham, they'll drive to Maryhill. The regular customers have got to go somewhere to get the produce.
The Borough Council is hopeful that a number of interim measures will avoid the government having to implement legally enforceable restrictions as it has done elsewhere.
Well, you hear this now. This is going to make you laugh. This is a woman called, let me get her name up here. Her name is Maria Crompton. She's the deputy leader of Sandwell Council. Listen to this woman address the town of Sandwell. You just couldn't write this. Listen.
We can't do this on our own. We need for you to help us overcome this virus. We don't want to go into lockdown. We need you to help us avoid going into lockdown.
Mother of God, huh?
They're advising residents to continue to shield if you're already shielding, not to go inside other people's houses, and to get tested and self-isolate if you have symptoms.
And the economic impact of the lockdown in Sandwell, it's already been devastating. Half the shops on the high street remain closed. The owners just haven't come back to open their businesses again. It's catastrophic for this place, right?
The measures aren't compulsory, so it'll be down to the community to play along.
People working class. If it's locked down, there's no work. So they wouldn't survive, it's hard for them.
There's not many customers that are out because they're a bit scared. Half the shops aren't open, they're still closed. So to lock down again, it'd be absolutely terrible.
I think they do need to take more advice and guidelines, but you know, it's until it happens in your family, I think it doesn't. It doesn't hit you, does it?
All I'm saying to people is keep safe and do as you're told.
Do as you're told now.
And we can all get through this. It's common sense, that's all it's about, common sense.
And of course it isn't about common sense really, is it? Little Sky News report this morning, 24 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Let's take another tune. Willie Nelson, I think. Willie Nelson, why not, eh? Back with you in a couple of minutes with more news. Yes, Willie Nelson. There you go. Marvellous. Willie Nelson on the Richie Allen Show. Sunday View, 21 minutes to the top of the hour. If you've got to be there in 20 minutes, you've still got time. Thanks for taking me with you. There'll be an app for this nonsense, by the way, real soon. There's an app in development. I've not even told Hayden this, but somebody who makes apps and has done a good job making apps has been in touch with me to say they've created an app if I want it. So there might be an app. I know. Shut up, I said. Right. You know the way I'm always banging on about the news media acting as the propaganda wing of the elite and pushing the agenda of the elite rather than challenging it? I've banged on about that for many, many, many years now. More years than I care to remember. So I was pretty glad I caught this on BBC Breakfast Television this morning. This is a beautiful little exercise in convincing the public that COVID is not just any old virus, but it's something far more serious. This is unbelievable. Listen to this. This is BBC News now. Sunday breakfast this morning. And a little exercise in letting you know that this is deadly, this virus. Do you want to hear it? Come with me through the magic door. Here it is. BBC Breakfast this morning.
Now, we've all been familiar with the common symptoms of coronavirus, a fever, a dry cough, fatigue and a loss of taste or smell. But a significant number of people say they still have debilitating symptoms months later.
Our reporter Hannah Gray has been speaking to three women who were diagnosed with the virus almost 4 months ago, but say the illness is still affecting their quality of life.
So, the intrepid reporter went out to speak to three women who had the virus 4 months ago, but are still not recovered. Have a listen.
My name's Jane, I'm 46, and my job is as an orthopaedic physiotherapist in South Yorkshire.
My name's Sophie, I'm a programme manager for a small charity in Sheffield.
I'm Jane, I'm a cancer nurse in Sheffield. I'm also a PhD student at Leeds Beckett University. I tested positive for coronavirus 126 days ago.
So why do you think it's so important to be sharing your experiences now?
No, that's not the first question. The first question is, why did you count every day since you were diagnosed with the virus? I was diagnosed 126 days ago.
Because it's not gone away, and because I know quite...
She looks the picture of health, this woman. This is available on BBC iPlayer. They all look remarkably well, these ladies.
Quite a lot of people for whom it's not gone away, and it's affecting our lives on a daily basis. It's a long, difficult, I'm not poorly enough to be in bed, but I haven't lived a normal day in 16 weeks.
A normal day in 16 weeks.
I think it's just so important now that we begin to understand the gigantic spectrum that COVID-19 is now starting to appear as, and especially for those of us who are suffering for a long time. I think we really need to raise awareness.
How has COVID-19 changed who you are as a person?
COVID-19 has made me less able to do what I love. So I love running, I love cycling, I love climbing, love the outdoors. It's been really hard to maintain those things. So in terms of your balance of your mental health, not being able to do the things that make you happy has been really hard.
Really hard.
You're desperate to get back to work, but what do employers need to understand?
I think employers have got a lot to learn about COVID, because it's not a linear recovery. So you can actually feel better one day and absolutely debilitated the next.
I'm giving my energy to my work and then I don't do anything else. It's like I work and I recover from being at work. And yeah, so it's really changed my quality of life.
Are you confident that you're going to make a full recovery from this?
This is fucking garbage.
Recovery from this.
You can't help having that worry in the back of your mind. Is this going
to... There's nothing wrong with any of these three women.
It's going to affect me kind of for the rest of my life, or is this something that, all being well, in a few months' time, I'm just going to look back on as a memory?
As a memory.
I really want people to understand that this is an illness that needs to be taken seriously, and it's...
This is just pure propaganda, right?
And it's not something that necessarily hospitalises you, but it really does change your life and the way that you can relate to other people.
It changes your life and the way that you can relate to other people. Did she say that?
This is an illness that needs to be taken seriously, and it's not something that necessarily hospitalises you, but it really does change your life and the way that you can relate to other people. And we don't know how long it's going to last for, and we don't know how we can get better.
Wow. Imagine they're telling the truth and they've got chronic fatigue and all of that. I would be asking them, did you have the flu jab last winter, as a matter of interest? Eh? Boom, boom. Did you have the flu jab? And if people are feeling fatigued and drained and down and muscular issues and stuff like that, maybe have a look at the vaccine you got last December or last November or last October maybe. But it's just propaganda by the BBC. It's a propaganda item. Let's get three women who had the virus and still don't feel great and package it up as, you see, you've got to start taking this virus seriously. So they go back to the studio where the presenter is odds on to tell you just how powerful that was, and then introduce an expert. Right? Yes.
Really powerful reflections there. Well, we're joined.
Really powerful, eh?
Joined now by Professor Paul Garner from the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, who has also had coronavirus. And Paul, you can relate to the stories we've just heard there, because you too have suffered from the So-called long COVID, as some are describing it.
Is this journalism or what? So they're bringing a guy on called Paul Garner, Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. And the guy is saying, Paul, you really suffered, or you are suffering, with long COVID. And the expert now was on to confirm what the three women said, the three random women, that, yeah, this thing goes on forever. Listen to this. This is just, I mean, it's great crack, really, when you think about it.
Yes, I'm on day 135 and every...
I'm on day 135. Has he got, like, when you see in the film, the old movies, in the jail cell, when you get a stick of chalk and you mark off each day that you've been in jail and then you cross out every seven, you know? I mean, this is fucking... I mean, are they really selling us this? They are. And somebody is buying it. We're not buying it. So he's on day 135. Go on, Paul. Tell us how you feel.
Yes, I'm on day 135, and every day I wake up and hope that I'm going to be better, and every day I feel unwell. I totally relate to what they're saying. It really is not...
We need a bit of music to accompany Paul now, because he's going to start telling us about all of his symptoms. Let's have a tune. Let's have some music to accompany Paul. Yeah. Come on, Paul. How does it make you feel?
A linear recovery. And how you manage it is actually really quite complicated, because quite early on, I found that if I overdid things, it would throw me back into bed. And I'm a very driven person, so it's very difficult to scale down my activities and my and what I did.
What kind of symptoms are you still suffering from?
So I have ringing in the ears, a tingling down my arms, but fatigue. I'll need to go back to bed three or four times a day.
Three or four times a day he has to go back to bed.
I used to, Sunday morning, I'd...
Lazy bastard, Paul.
Normally go on my happy bus run, but...
Happy bus run? What the fuck is happy bus run? Find out for me, please. Happy bus run. Anyway, go on, Paul.
Today I might make a couple of kilometres down to the supermarket.
He might make a couple of kilometres to the supermarket today. Go on, son.
So... if I speak for a long time on conference calls, my speech starts to go and I'll get a headache. It's a...
Then he laughs.
So one of the important things is for me is that I have problems related to fatigue, but there's a huge wide spectrum of different conditions that people have.
Yeah. You've just been listening to propaganda in grandi... in writ large by the BBC. It's astonishing that. Suicide is painless, Paul. Might be easier. I'm not encouraging anybody to commit suicide. And listen, if you know somebody who committed suicide, don't start ranting at me on Twitter. I couldn't give a shit, to be honest. Did you hear that? Before you start tweeting in, I don't care, because I don't know you. Oh, be Jesus. Right. Yeah. Chronic fatigue. What have we got for you? Chris Smith is a virologist and I think founded the Naked Scientist podcast. He was on the BBC because Boris put the brakes on. There's loads of increases in the numbers. Bullshit, but that's what they're telling us. He was asked, the virologist, how worried should we be?
Well, on the one hand, it is a worry, of course it's a worry. But on the other hand, it's reassuring. And it's reassuring because it shows that, A, the predictions that we made, that we would see these ripples and we would see local outbreaks, that's coming true. So we know we're predicting things correctly, but also we're detecting these things. And I'd much rather know about a threat that I can detect and preempt and then act on, rather than something that catches us out, which is what happened back in March.
What do you make of the measures that have been put in place? For example, here, we can't visit relatives, we can't sit in the gardens of relatives, but we can go to the pub. For lots of people, that just doesn't make sense.
Yes, it does sound a little bit incongruous, but what we know about the spread of the virus is that 80 or 90% of the transmission events, in other words, me giving it to you, those sorts of transmissions happen within the household setting. So the interventions that are likely to be the most effective when you've got outbreaks like these ones on a local level are going to be things that impact on that particular scenario. So people gathering under a roof, families getting together, extended families.
Yeah, I'm not going to subject you to too much more of them. The reason I downloaded this clip is because she does ask him the question that should have been asked way back in March. In fact, she's the only presenter I've seen in recent times to ask the right question. I'm astonished, she asked it. I'm keeping you on tenterhooks here. What's the question? Well, you will hear her ask it, but he doesn't answer it.
But some people are questioning the necessity of these measures. They're looking at the data and seeing the fact that, yes, people with underlying health conditions are particularly susceptible, but if healthy people aren't quite as susceptible, some are arguing perhaps just let the virus spread. And that as long as we protect the vulnerable, that's the best thing to do. What would you say to that?
Wow. What you just heard, dear listener, for the first time in I don't know how long, is a presenter doing her job. Why are healthy people being locked up? Let them get it. They'll not, most likely not have any real complications. It will go, they'll be immune. Why don't we just protect people who might be vulnerable to it? That's the question, you see, that should have been asked from day one. But nobody asked it, outside of the independent media. Does he answer it, though? No.
Well, the numbers have gone up. It's absolutely true, and that's what's prompted this action. If you look at the number of cases declared last week, it was about 4,500. If you look at the number of cases declared this week, it was about 5,200. So it's up 13% or so in just a week.
She's inexperienced, and to her credit, she asked the right question. She should stop him now and say, listen, go back to the question I asked you. What do you say to people who say the lockdown really is pointless? Let the healthy go about their lives and protect those who might be susceptible, but she doesn't stop him.
The death rate hasn't changed. Now, on the one hand, you could say, well, that's quite reassuring. We're not seeing an increase in the death rate. But remember, the cases today...
He just rabbits on and she doesn't draw him back to the question she asked. There you are. A lot of tweets on this, so thank you to those of you who have tweeted. Hi to David Stanford. How you doing, David? Hi to Maureen as well. Good morning to Mwinga. How you doing, Mwinga? Good morning to Feminator, who says, let the laughers keep on laughing. Yes. Hi to Acker. How you doing, Acker? Hi to Jason. How you doing, Jason? Jason says, Richie, I've come to the conclusion that laughing at this shite is the only form of relief. Thanks, BBG. You're doing a great job. Well, some of it is so ridiculous, it's impossible not to draw attention to it and to laugh at it. I mean, it's crazy. You have a guy who's an epidemiologist at Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, and he's on BBC listing all of these symptoms that he has, tinnitus and fatigue, and he can't walk down to the shops. I mean, it's absolute vaudeville, this. So laughing at it is my coping mechanism. It really is. It's my coping mechanism. If I don't laugh at it, there is another way to go in terms of depression, and it's not good. So just laugh at it. Laugh out loud. Hi to Shasta. Listening to the BBC report on the three women. Interesting to hear of the after effects these women have following their bout of COVID. I became ill with ME over 20 years ago, partly caused by flu vaccinations, in my honest opinion, says Shasta. Well, that's why I made the point. I would be asking these ladies, did you have the flu vaccine last winter? Why does that matter? Well, it might matter. It feckin' might matter. Because we know increasingly, we've learned over the years, that vaccines can be very harmful. Not all of them, of course, but some of them can be. Swine flu vaccine gave people narcolepsy. Gardasil has given girls in Ireland and elsewhere symptoms that are very similar to ME. We know this. It's not untrue. So anybody now who's going down with debilitating constant tiredness and fatigue, I'd be saying, what medication have you been taking? What vaccines did you take? But of course, nobody will. They won't ask those questions. You know? Yeah. I've missed a few tweets there, so apologies for the ones I've missed. We're nearly at an end anyway. I just wanted to go out with one clip, and it is a bit depressing, but I don't want you to be depressed. It's about the economic impact of the lockdown and the easing of restrictions slightly, and then putting the brakes on and imposing more restrictions. You're talking millions of people out of work in the long term, in the short term. And the long term effects of that, of course, are, for most people, immeasurable. I want you to have a listen to a woman who's apparently a well-known celebrity wedding planner. Her name is Sarah Haywood. I've never heard of Sarah. No big deal. She's probably never heard of me either. But she very eloquently spoke on Sky News this morning about the impact of the lockdown. And apparently one in four businesses that cater for weddings has already gone out of business permanently, with more to follow. And this is just one industry. Listen to Sarah Haywood on Sky News this morning.
Well, if you work in the wedding business, we've never been busier in terms of postponing weddings, then postponing them again, and then cancelling them on Friday. And I have to say, you've just given a great report all about venues. Well, it's not all about venues. It's about hundreds of thousands of people, tens of thousands of small businesses, micro businesses, sole traders, freelancers, all of whom rely on the wedding industry to earn their living. And the organisation, the Association of British Wedding Businesses, are hell-bent on getting us open come what may. And look what's just happened. The 30-person wedding was cancelled. The real issue is that we need a bridge to the other side. The season has already been decimated. We already will not recover this year. And we're a seasonal industry, and therefore we need assistance. Some of us, many of us, have put forward good ideas. And the reason to support weddings is we are made up of the kind of businesses that have been forgotten along the way, the family-run businesses, including venues, but also many, many others, bridal retailers, photographers, videographers, caterers, DJs, bands, the people who do up cars and bring them out at weekends for weddings. All these people rely on this sector, and we need a bridge to the other side. None of us want to be super spreaders of this virus.
Yeah. And that's one industry. I've had a tweet from Aiken who says that he's facing redundancy now after 5 years in a job working in training and development. I'm sorry to hear that, mate. I really am. I really am sorry to hear that. I don't know what to say to you. It's a dreadful set of circumstances. And I'll tell you something else, Aiken. On the morning that you're telling me this, this government here in the UK is seriously considering asking everybody over 50 in the country to be prepared to be asked to stay at home in the event of a so-called second wave. This is in the Sunday Telegraph this morning. Elderly may be asked to stay at home under Minister's blueprint to avoid new lockdown. And by elderly, they mean 50 and over. They're very specific. It's a tyranny. And I don't like using it anymore, that phrase, that word, because it almost becomes a cliche then. But it's a tyranny, and it is where we, you know, this is where we are. We are now in the times we feared we would be in. We've arrived here. And I'll go out where I came in. I think I've said 1,000 times over the years, never put journalists or radio presenters on a pedestal. But some of you do. I see you doing it. You do it with me. I see the emails you send me. And I see you doing it with your heroes in the Truther industrial complex. Stop doing that. We're not important. What some of us have managed to do is create space over the years to discuss this agenda. But we can't do anything about it on our own. Do you understand? All I can do is make some impact locally. And I've done that from time to time over the years. I stood up to Manchester Council, infamously, as you might remember if you've been with the radio programme for a long time, told them to fuck off, told their bailiffs to fuck off. And I've helped people around me from time to time deal with, you know, those in alleged authority. You've got to do it for yourself. You've got to take your own steps in order for us to somehow roll back against this. Waiting around for somebody else to do it for you is not the answer. And it doesn't have to be marches to Speaker's Corner to see your hero truther tell you what you already know. It's got to be something a bit different. civil disobedience. I don't know. Listen, that's it for Sunday View. I'll be back with you tomorrow, Monday at 5 o'clock for the regular Richie Allen radio show. Thanks for listening this morning. Look after yourselves and one another. Get out and have a bit of fresh air. And don't comply. Don't wear a mask. When they ask you why, tell them it's none of your business. None of your business. Peter Ebdon was brilliant the other day. That's between me and my doctor. It's none of your business. Carry on. Bye-bye. Hey, listen. See you tomorrow. Bye now. Bye. This is for my mate, Jean Ann.